The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And for the audience at home, this is the sound of Google executives with their brains on drugs. This is the sound of a motorcycle burning donuts on the grave of Lowry Mays. And now, here's Nicole.
I think most people listening don't know who Lowry Mays is, and I feel compelled to have to tell you every day. He was one of the brothers, the Mays brothers, who owned and ran Clear Channel, who killed, my business, my beloved radio industry. But I digress. Welcome to a Wednesday. It is day two of the impeachment trial of Donald J. Trump in the U.S. Senate. And I got to tell you, it's all that's happened so far today. Things just kicked off 2 hours ago. We do this program live at 3 p.m. Eastern, working on moving to live at 5, coming sometime in the next couple of weeks, we hope. Knock on wood laminate here. But in the meantime, so today's festivities, as it were, got underway at one Eastern. I didn't sleep much last night. I think when it finally ended, I was so wired. I slept maybe 2 hours last night. So please pardon my spaciness today. I guess that's the only way I can put it. Anyway, so all that's happened so far is Adam Schiff has been giving his opening statement. He's been going now for almost 2 hours. But I pulled a clip from today. This is Adam Schiff explaining in under 2 minutes what this whole case is about.
Those 3 days in July, the 24th, the 25th, and the 26th, reveal a lot about President Trump's effort to solicit help from a foreign country in assisting his own reelection. On the 24th, Special Counsel Mueller testifies that Russia interfered in our 2016 election to assist the Trump campaign.
Yep.
Which knew about the interference, welcomed it, and utilized it. That's the 24th. The 25th is the day of the call, when President Trump, believing he had escaped accountability for Russian meddling in the first election and his welcoming of it, asked the Ukrainian president to help him undermine the special counsel's conclusion and help him smear a political opponent, former Vice President Biden. And then the third day in a row in July, President Trump sought to ensure that Ukraine had received his request and understood it and would take the necessary steps to announce the investigations that he wanted. 3 days in July. In many ways, those 3 days in July tell so much of the story. This course of conduct alone should astound all of us who value the sanctity of our elections and who understand that the vast powers of the presidency are reserved only for actions which benefit the country as a whole, rather than the political fortunes of any one individual. President Trump's effort to use an official head of state phone call to solicit the announcement of investigations helpful to his reelection is not only conduct unbecoming a president, but it is conduct of one who believes that the powers of his high office are political tools to be wielded against his opponents, including by asking a foreign government to investigate a United States citizen and for a corrupt purpose. That alone is grounds for removal from office of the 45th president.
That alone is grounds for removal from office of the 45th president. Again, 1 minute and 54 seconds, and he laid it out. But already he's been talking for about an hour and 54 minutes. And, you know, David, my husband, came in a few minutes ago and he said, you know, as good of a job as Adam Schiff is doing, it's too much of one person just speaking, just droning on and on. Can you imagine being one of the senators tied to your seat? Basically, you're not allowed to get up and leave. You're not allowed to talk. You're not allowed to check your phone. You have to sit and listen, and it drones on and on. And even though, yes, I believe Adam Schiff is doing an exemplary job, I think he's doing a great job, there's just so much you could take of one voice going on and on and on and on and on and on. That's why this format sucks. Not being allowed to have witnesses, we'll get to all that in a moment, is just insane. Just insane. So rather than turning on the monitor and just letting it play, because honestly, I see our numbers are down. People are watching the hearing, and that's a good thing. So I guess if you're interested in watching it gavel to gavel, you're not listening to my show today anyway. So here's what we're going to do today. I'm going to give you a nice little recap of what happened yesterday. We'll play some clips. We'll, you know, bring you up to date for in case you missed yesterday. I mean, a lot of people have to work. So we'll go over what happened and then have a conversation with David Bender. David Bender, the other day we were talking about Air America Radio, right? David Bender was the political honcho at Air America Radio, and he's back in that role now at Progressive Voices. So he joined me for a little bit of discussion about what happened yesterday, what's the entire thing. And so we'll get to that in a few minutes. Right. Gary in the YouTube chat room said, once someone talks that long, everyone just turns it off mentally. It drones after a while. You stop hearing what's being said. So we'll get to it. We'll give you a good sort of recap of yesterday, and because there's a lot going on. They're making a great case. The Republicans are spinning their wheels and saying abso-fucking-lutely nothing. But you knew that. You knew that was going to be what happened. Anyway, I want to start the show, as I tend to do on most days, with a bit of the funny, but today it comes with a bit of the bittersweet. He was so funny. If you're not a connoisseur of Monty Python, let me recommend that maybe this week, as we're buried in this impeachment stuff and you need an escape, there's always Monty Python and the Holy Grail, right? Which is the gold standard of comedy movies. But let me suggest to you one of my favorites, Life of Brian. If you are a religion skeptic, as am I, if you are one of those who, you know, understands spirituality and people's need to grasp some kind of higher power, that's all well and good. But if you've got a real problem with organized religion and the cults that surround them, Life of Brian is the movie for you. And I bring it up today because we awoke this morning to the news that Terry Jones passed away. Terry Jones, the name might not mean a whole lot to you, but he was one of the members of Monty Python. And he wasn't one of the front guys. I mean, when I think of Monty Python, yes, I think of Eric Cleese and John Cleese and Eric Idle and Michael Palin, right? But there was Graham Chapman, who actually plays Brian in The Life of Brian, and Terry Jones, who plays a bunch of different roles, but most notably, Brian's mom. Yes, Terry Jones plays Brian's mother. He often played a lot of female roles. Terry Jones was diagnosed with dementia a few years back. And so the word news broke this morning that Terry Jones had passed away at the age of 77. I don't have just one sketch that I found online because a lot of them have been copyright removed. But so I'm going to play a little montage that The Guardian actually put together to honor Terry Jones of Monty Python, who we lost today. Here we go.
Now you listen here. He's not the bazaar. He's a very naughty boy. Now go away. I'm his mother, that's who.
But then we all went away and did our research and we started reading the Gospels again. And I think all unanimously came to the conclusion, well, you know, Christ wasn't a bad bloke, really. There's not a lot you can make fun of. I mean, I would quarrel with him on a few occasions. I think he didn't do right by some of the fig trees in the world. I think he did blast them a bit, and I think that was a bit wrong of him. And some of the...
Ah, good afternoon, sir, and how are we today?
Better.
Better?
Better get a bucket. I'm going to throw up.
A Gaston, a bucket for monsieur.
I guess that's a visual. He's huge. He's the food critic who's just huge
so
and
now,
throws up.
Cleaning up in here. But I can't.
See, he
really
plays
stand.
A woman all the time.
Because you see,
this is from The Meaning of
I
Life.
I feel that life's a game. You sometimes win or lose. And though I may be down right now, at least I don't work for Jews.
Oh. And he poured a bucket of shit over him. And this last clip is at an award show.
Calm
and
down.
Terry Jones is there with his son, and he can't quite get the words out.
We'd just like to say thank you for everyone. It's I know it's a great honour for Dad to win this award. And
aww.
Just the struggles we're having at the moment is a bit hard, but we're so proud of him.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Terry Jones. Oops, I got to do this. He will be missed. But the beautiful thing is the works of Monty Python live on. I don't sleep well at night, and one night I was flipping around the channels and I came upon a Monty Python on BBC television, a Monty Python's Flying Circus marathon all night long, and I didn't mind not sleeping at all. So watch The Life of Brian. I may have to watch it this weekend. And yes, Diane Russell, that's my favorite Monty Python movie as well. All right. I guess now is a good time. Adam Schiff is still speaking. We can check in with him for a moment and hear what he's
President
saying.
Reagan described.
He's got to be wrapping up his
America is not just
opening,
a country, but
opening
also
statement
an idea.
Soon. Let's listen for just a moment or two, okay?
But what worth is that idea if, when tried, we do not affirm the values that underpin it? What will those nascent democracies around the world conclude? That democracy is not only difficult, but maybe that it's too difficult? Maybe that it's impossible? And who will come to fill the void that we leave when the light from that shining city upon a hill is extinguished? The autocrats with whom we compete, who value not freedom and fair elections, but the unending rule of a repressive executive. Autocrats that value not freedom of the press and open debate, but disinformation, propaganda, and state-sanctioned lies.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Vladimir Putin would like nothing better. The Russians have little democracy left, thanks to Vladimir Putin.
All right, so Adam Schiff there is going on about Putin. I'm about 5 or 10 minutes behind because I kept pausing it. So that I'll refresh it so we get caught up in real time, so I can keep an eye. Whoops, wrong screen there on YouTube. So I'll keep an eye on it in the background. But I guess now is as good a time as any for to go into what's news and recap what happened yesterday. And because, you know what? Because it's Wednesday, we'll do it live, damn it. Whoops. Oh, it would help if I turned this up.
We'll do it live. Do it live.
Okay.
I'll write it and we'll do it live.
All right, we'll do it live.
Fucking thing
Shut up,
sucks.
Bill. God. All right, I know you're angry, but calm down. All right, so... Well, here's what happened yesterday.
The Senate is adjourned.
Well, the U.S. Senate wrapped up its first marathon day in the impeachment trial of Donald J. Trump on Tuesday, January 21st. Actually, in the early morning hours of Wednesday, January 22nd, by adopting a resolution outlining the basic rules for the rest of the trial. The party line vote of 53-47 was the same tally for each of the 11 amendments offered by Senate Democrats, except for one. Susan Collins became the lone Republican to cast a vote with the Democrats on the 10th amendment offered out of 11, which would have allowed each side additional time to respond to motions. But that went down 52-48. The prospect of more Republicans defecting to vote with the Democrats dimmed when, just before the trial began yesterday, Mitch McConnell released a revised version of his opening rules. The changes were handwritten into the margins of the resolution, which were then read by Chief Justice, Roberts. And they came about, reportedly, as the result of a deal with a group of 15 or so Republican senators who had concerns about them. So as amended, the rules now give the impeachment managers and Trump's legal team 3 days each to make their 24 hours of trial arguments. Or previously, they would have to get their 24 hours of arguments into 2 days. Go figure. And the revised rules also agreed that the House evidence from the official impeachment inquiry would be automatically admitted, where the original version would have required a vote on each individual piece of evidence that the Democrats wanted to reintroduce. So that deal apparently kept the caucus voting in lockstep. That's why you saw every vote was 53 to 47, 53 to 47, 53 to 47. And I guess Susan Collins probably made a side deal with McTurtle, saying, I'm going to vote no on one other, just so, you know, to show that I'm a rebel. All right. Well, anyway, the debate and the votes yesterday were all about the rules, which lead House impeachment manager Adam Schiff said was more important than the senator's eventual vote on whether to convict or acquit Trump, arguing that a fair trial would include witnesses and documents, which the White House has blocked from the beginning of the inquiry. Because really, think about it. Who's ever heard of a trial without witnesses or evidence? It's the batshit crazy existence of today's Republican Party. So Adam Schiff opened for the prosecution, saying McConnell's resolution required the House to prove its case without witnesses, without documents, calling it a, quote, trial first, then evidence approach.
The trial should be fair to the House, which has been wrongly deprived of evidence by a president who wishes to conceal it. It should be fair to the president, who will not benefit from an acquittal or dismissal if the trial is not viewed as fair, if it is not viewed as impartial, and fair to you senators, who are tasked with the grave responsibility of determining whether to convict or acquit, and should do so with the benefit of all of the facts, and fair to the American people, who deserve the full truth and who deserve representatives who will seek it on their behalf.
Thank you, Adam Schiff. Now, as I mentioned, the new resolution calls for opening arguments that began at 1 Eastern about 2 hours ago. House managers and the president's counsel each given 24 hours over 3 days to present their opening arguments. After that, senators will have 16 hours to ask questions of the two panels. The thing is, though, if I understand this correctly, they don't actually get to talk. No, that, under threat of imprisonment, as you've heard the sergeant at arms say at the start of every day's hearing. They write their question down on paper. I'm not quite sure who gets to read them, but that's how they ask their questions. So there's no back and forth, as far as I know, questioning of the panels, because there are no witnesses yet by the senators. Confused yet? Then, after the 16 hours, then senators will have the opportunity to vote on whether they want to hear from additional witnesses or see additional documents. Yeah, it's back ass words. Anyway, the mood yesterday got ugly at times as Democrats laid out their case and Republicans attacked Democrats, mostly complaining about the process and lying. Seriously, they lied so much that I guess it's just contagious from Donald Trump on down. A debate about a subpoena for John Bolton got kind of testy between House manager, impeachment manager Jerry Nadler, and Donald Trump's White House lawyer, Pat Cipollone. I don't know if it's Cipollone or Cipollone. And it prompted the Chief Justice, John Roberts, who is presiding over the trial, to issue a warning about civility. Here's a little bit of the back and forth, starting with Gerald Nadler.
I see a lot of senators voting for a cover-up, voting to deny witnesses, an absolutely indefensible vote, obviously a treacherous vote, a vote against an honest consideration of the evidence of the, against the president, a vote against an honest trial, a vote against the United States. A real trial, we know, has witnesses. We urge you to do your duty, permit a fair trial. All the witnesses must be permitted. That's elementary in American justice. Either you want the truth and you must permit the witnesses, or you want a shameful cover-up. History will judge, and so will the electorate.
And so will the electorate. So then it was Pat Cipollone's turn, and oh my goodness, the outraged indignation. My goodness.
We've been respectful of the Senate.
Right.
We've made our arguments to you.
No, you haven't.
And you don't deserve, and we don't deserve, what just happened.
What?
Mr. Nadler came up here and made false allegations.
No.
Against our team.
No.
He made false allegations against all of you.
He
accused
he
you of a cover-up.
Well,
he's been making false allegations
if the shoe fits.
Against the president. The only one who should be embarrassed, Mr. Nadler, is you for the way you've addressed this body. Mr. Nadler, you owe an apology to the president of the United States and his family.
Really?
You owe an apology
really?
To the Senate. But most of all, you owe an apology to the American people.
It is
and here's Nadler again.
Belief that the president claims monarchical powers. I can do whatever I want under Article 2, says he.
Yes, he does.
And then acts on that. Defies everything. Defies the law to withhold aid from Ukraine. Defies the law in a dozen different directions all the time. And lies about it all the time.
All the
and
time.
And says to Mrs. Cipollone here to lie about it.
So that prompted that back and forth, and it went on. There was just the gist of it. Prompted Chief Justice John Roberts to scold them, both sides equally.
I think it is appropriate at this point for me to admonish both the House managers and the President's counsel in equal terms to remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body.
Really?
I do think those addressing the Senate should remember where they are.
Oh, my goodness. The world's greatest deliberative body. That may have been true a generation or two ago, but I don't think anyone can say that today. Now, Roberts didn't butt in when Schiff called out Cipollone for blatantly lying about the House impeachment inquiry process like he did. This was an astounding moment yesterday. Pat Cipollone got up and just blatantly lied. Now, I know all the senators swore an oath, but Pat Cipollone, Adam Schiff, the people who are presenting the cases, they're not sworn in. Shouldn't they be? Because I don't think Cipollone could have gotten away with saying this.
We've been respectful.
Oops, that's the wrong one. This one.
Not even Mr. Schiff's Republican colleagues were allowed into the skiff.
Bullshit.
Information was selectively leaked out.
Nonsense.
Witnesses were threatened.
Bullshit.
Good public servants were told that they would be held in contempt. The president was not allowed to call witnesses.
That's not true.
By the way, there's still evidence in the skiff that we haven't been allowed to see. I wonder why.
Bullshit.
That's bullshit. That's so not true. He got up there and he just blatantly lied to the Senate, to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and to the American people. And thank you, Adam Schiff, for standing up and, well, almost calling him out.
Now, I'm not going to suggest to you that Mr. Cipollone would deliberately make a false statement. I will leave it to Mr. Cipollone to make those allegations against others. But I will tell you this, he's mistaken.
Mistaken?
He's mistaken. Every Republican on the three investigative committees was allowed to participate in the depositions. And more
yes,
than that, they got the same time we did.
You show me another presidential impeachment that had that kind of access for the opposite party. Now, there were depositions in the Clinton impeachment.
Yes, there were
depositions in the Nixon impeachment. So what they would say is some secret process. Well, there were the same private depositions in these other impeachments as well.
The only thing that Schiff got wrong there was saying that Cipollone was mistaken. He wasn't mistaken. He's lying. This is what they do. He lied. That's all they know how to do. And again, I want to find out, are these people under oath? Can they just get up and lie with impunity with no consequences? They should be sworn in because I know they're presenting the case. But as presenting the case, I mean, look, Adam Schiff is still talking. He's still going with his opening statement.
As much as our founders feared an unchecked chief executive able to pursue his own will over the will of the people, they also feared the poison of excessive factionalism.
You think? Okay, so anyway, Adam Schiff is still delivering his opening statement. I have no idea how long this is going to go on. Again, he's got 24 hours over 3 days to present his case, but do it without any witnesses, without any of the documents they subpoenaed from the White House, with only 7 voices, 7 House impeachment managers chosen by Nancy Pelosi. And I got to say again, sorry, I don't know how she picked these people. Let's just say I disagree with probably 5 out of the 7 picks. But anyway, I digress. A couple more clips I want to play for you before... I'll back it up. I think Adam Schiff obviously should be one of the 7. I think Gerald Nadler should be one of the 7. And actually, I think Hakeem Jeffries deserves his slot. And I think he proved it yesterday. I'm not the biggest fan of actually any of the 3 of them when it comes to policy. None of them would I consider a real progressive. So legislatively, they're not my favorite members of Congress, but I think they're doing a fine job in this whole impeachment thing. I would have liked to have seen Jamie Raskin, Pramila Jayapal, Katie Porter, Ted Lieu, Eric Swalwell, even. Those are just some suggestions, but nobody asked me. But Hakeem Jeffries really made the case. It was, I think, late yesterday afternoon, early evening. Here's just a little bit of Hakeem Jeffries making his point. Again, the arguments yesterday were all on regarding rules, regarding amendments to subpoena documents that the White House has refused to hand over and to subpoena witnesses that Donald Trump has forbidden from testifying. Here's Hakeem Jeffries.
The proposed amendment for witness testimony is necessary in light of the president's determined effort to bury the evidence and cover up his corrupt abuse of power. The House tried to get Mr. Mulvaney's testimony. We subpoenaed him. Mr. Mulvaney, together with other key witnesses, National Security Advisor John Bolton, Senior White House Aide Robert Blair, Office of Management and Budget Official Michael Duffy, and National Security Council Lawyer John Eisenberg, were called to testify before the House as part of this impeachment inquiry. But President Trump was determined to hide from the American people what they had to say. The president directed the entire executive branch and all of his top aides and advisors to defy all requests for their testimony. That cannot be allowed to stand.
Nope.
Third, Mr. Mulvaney is a highly relevant witness to the events at issue in this trial. Mr. Mulvaney was at the center of every stage of the president's substantial pressure campaign against Ukraine. Based on the extensive evidence the House did obtain, it is clear that Mulvaney was crucial in planning the scheme, executing its implementation, and carrying out the cover-up. Emails and witness testimony show that Mr. Mulvaney was in the loop on the president's decision to explicitly condition a White House meeting on Ukraine's announcement of investigations beneficial to the president's re-election prospects. He was closely involved in implementing the president's hold on the security assistance and subsequently admitted that the funds were being withheld to put pressure on Ukraine to conduct one of the phony political investigations that the president wanted. Phony political investigations.
Yep.
A trial would not be complete without the testimony of Mick Mulvaney.
That's true.
Make no mistake, the evidentiary record that we have built is powerful and can clearly establish the president's guilt on both of the articles of impeachment, but it is hardly complete. The record comes to you without the testimony of Mr. Mulvaney and other important witnesses. And that brings me to one final preliminary observation.
Yes.
The American people agree that there cannot be a fair trial without hearing from witnesses who have relevant information to provide. The Constitution, our democracy, the Senate, the President, and most importantly, the American people deserve a fair trial. A fair trial requires witnesses in order to provide the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
That is why this amendment should be adopted.
It should be, but it wasn't. None of them were. But what they did was they tabled these amendments so they can come back to them after both sides present their case, because that's when you're supposed to call witnesses, after you're done presenting your case. It makes no sense. Well, it looks like Adam Schiff has wrapped up his initial opening comments anyway, so the talking heads are now doing their thing. So I'll tell you what we'll do. I recorded a conversation a couple hours ago with David Bender. David Bender, you may remember from Air America. He was the political director over there. He worked very closely with Rachel Maddow. Apparently, they're still very good friends. And he is now the political director at the Progressive Voices Network. So he does a program on Progressive Voices. I'm his guest today, and he's my guest today. David, I don't know if you noted the anniversary just 2 days ago. It was 10 years that Air America left the airwaves on the 20th of January, marked 10 years.
I try to think of when we entered the airwaves in 2004. Uh-huh. With high hopes, and I think we accomplished a lot. There seems to be someone named Rachel Maddow who grew out of that.
Yep.
Who was name-checked on the floor of the Senate during the first day of the impeachment hearings. In fact, not only name-checked, a clip of her interview with Lev Parnas is now a part of history.
Oh, wow. Well, that was a brilliant interview. But we're talking today because we have made it through the first day of the Senate trial for the impeachment of Donald J. Trump, something that this is only the third time has ever happened in U.S. history. Is it getting the, respect isn't the right word, the recognition, the historical recognition that an event like this deserves?
Well, Nicole, I think the issue really comes down to whether this, it's not going to move 67 senators.
No.
We know that.
No.
Unless Donald Trump follows through on what he suggested he might do and come into this Senate chamber and sit in the front row. That might gall enough senators just to move the dial, because he won't be able to restrain himself, as we know. He will talk about admonitions from the Chief
right.
Justice.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
That would be fun to watch.
Yes, it would.
But to your question, I do think that people are paying attention. I do think this will penetrate. I think the opening day was incredibly significant because the Republican team, the president's team of Jay Sekulow and his White House counsel, were not prepared at all for the fact that the Democrats were going to use procedural votes to make their case. And they came prepared. They came ready to start the day, and that is what won the day, in my view. Now, this is all about television.
Mm-hmm.
Television gave us Donald Trump. Television will be his downfall.
Let's hope.
It may not happen yet, but that's what's going to happen. And so prepare for this. The next round, he's held back his television lawyers, Ken Starr and Alan Dershowitz.
Uh-huh.
And we will see them on the third day.
Okay.
So this is not a one-round fight. It's probably going to go, with the change in the Senate rules that Republicans forced on McConnell yesterday, to go longer than 2 days, three spread out over a longer period.
Right.
We could see a full three-week trial, certainly two, but maybe three. And we'll see. It's going to penetrate over that period of time.
I hope you're right. I think you are, because, you know, it's hard to get a measure on it. Back in the days of even going back to 99 or even going back to Bill Clinton, the media landscape was so different then. There was no streaming video. There was no you couldn't just get it everywhere. You had to watch one of the three networks, basically. We didn't even have, you know, cable news channels like we have now. So then the networks were forced to cover those hearings. And I think that most of them ran them yesterday, but now they're all sort of pushing viewers to their streams. Is that a good thing, or is that working against us?
You know, I think we're going to see it sort of, and I'm not privy to what the network's thinking is, but there's no way that the networks will preempt 12 hours of coverage
every day.
Too much revenue every day.
That's right.
But I think they will cut in for key moments,
uh-huh.
for closing arguments,
yeah.
for things that are crucial. Certainly the vote that is yet to come, the deferred vote on witnesses, evidence, which I think is likely to happen sometime next week, sometime midweek. That vote is the vote where Mitt Romney has said he is prepared to cast a vote. Susan Collins, who is the only one who broke yesterday, again on a procedural vote, but late in the night, to show that she may still hope to be reelected. She is now, I don't know if you've noted this,
the most unpopular senator in the country.
Exactly. She's eclipsed Mitch McConnell. It's a neck and neck race. They're only about a point apart. But when this is over, Mitch McConnell will reclaim his rightful place as the most despised senator in the
Hopefully
United States.
Hopefully the most despised ex-senator in the United States, because he is up for election come November. So indeed. You mentioned David Bender. What we're going to be looking out for is the actual vote on calling witnesses. Now, for people who sat glued to the TV for the better part of 12 hours yesterday, it seemed like that's what they were doing yesterday. Now, Mitch McConnell said up front in his convoluted manner of trying to run this trial that they will consider votes on witnesses and the documents that the White House has been blocking after the arguments are presented by both sides. So trial first, then they vote on the evidence. So was Adam Schiff, were the Democrats trying to make a point yesterday with their 11 amendments to get those documents released and to call those witnesses?
Absolutely. That's exactly what they were forced to do.
Yep.
Remember, they didn't see these rules until literally the midnight hour, midnight Moscow Mitch.
Yep.
He's alliterative now. They did the exact right thing. Chuck Schumer did not back down, kept bringing up each individual witness or body of evidence from OMB, the State Department, the Defense Department, all of the documents that will fully inculpate this president and his henchmen in a conspiracy. That's what this is. They all know it, but none of that was possible. And the reason we know that this made sense is because going into this, 70% of the Americans, including a majority of Republicans, a small one, but a majority of Republicans, want witnesses.
Yeah.
They want evidence.
Yeah.
They want a trial.
Right.
And that's what That's why it was so important to show that the Republicans didn't do this, so that when they acquit, because they almost certainly will, I don't want to presume anything. This president is capable of upsetting his own apple cart every day, every minute, every tweet gives a new opportunity. But let's say that he is acquitted. What happened yesterday, Nicole, was showing that this was not a fair process for the American people. They will feel cheated by this president.
Right. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is the way that Mitch McConnell held the votes for these amendments. He didn't vote to kill them. He voted to table them, basically saying, we're not going to vote on this now. That's so that they can bring them up again. Because if they vote no on these witnesses, that's a final no.
Well, actually, it's not, because this is all about sequencing. No, okay. They could have brought it up and voted it down. It's just the way in which it was done. The truth is, what was in the underlying resolution that they passed at in the wee hours, in the 1 o'clock hour, was something that does allow for another vote on witnesses at the end of it. They're calling it the Clinton rules. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a tortured explanation for misbehavior. It's not what happened. The Clinton witnesses had been deposed already.
Right.
And that's what's different here.
The Clinton administration participated. They adhered to subpoenas. They turned over documents that were requested. They participated, where this administration is doing a complete stonewall. And
including the president.
Yeah.
President Clinton was deposed on camera. This is when we learned that there is some confusion about the definition of the word is.
That's right. That's right.
I'm sorry to bring that up, a painful memory for all of us.
Yes, it is. But, it is history. And at least Bill Clinton sat and was interviewed. Donald Trump, does what he always does and lies. And just like he said, y'all sit in the front row of the gallery. Nonsense. Not only is he not doing that, he will not answer a single question. He will not, be interviewed. He will not be deposed. Yet he looks straight into the camera and says, oh, I would love to answer the questions. Nonsense.
Well, the only good thing about him looking straight into the camera in Davos was that there was not a helicopter behind him. I think he keeps a helicopter, sort of in his pocket, just lets it out, one of those toy helicopters, so he can make noise while he's talking and yell all the time.
Yeah.
The American people, Nicole, I am convinced that, and we're seeing it now, there was an interesting brief moment, MSNBC interviewed three former Trump voters who had been longtime McCain supporters in Arizona.
Oh, wow.
And all of them, all three separately, said they were kind of disgusted by their Senator Martha McSally.
I should hope so.
And the partisanship that she's shown, and being an always Trumper. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening now. People are growing weary of this. They're being made to feel stupid by having lies told to them repeatedly and forced to accept it. Now, I'm not saying, we're hearing the word cult a lot now.
Yeah.
We're hearing it from Lev Parnas. We're hearing it from a lot of people. And it is true that 80 to 85% of Republicans would, in fact, walk to the edge of the cliff and possibly jump with Donald Trump. The problem is, that isn't for Donald Trump. It's an increasingly small number. That is a minority of a minority.
Sure. Yep.
And that's what they are misreading. They are in lockstep as lemmings, but when they go off the cliff, there won't be anyone left.
Of course not. Right. No, and you're absolutely right. David Bender is with us. He's the political director here on the Progressive Voices Network. Think back about over 20 years now when the Dixie Chicks, a country band, was out. I think they were in France. And it was when George Bush lied us into war. And one of the Dixie Chicks said something about, I can't believe he's from Texas. I'm embarrassed. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the gist of what she said. Well, you would have thought back here at home, she, you know, hung our president in effigy on foreign soil. And back then, there was an adage, which is politics ends at the water's edge or something like that.
No, that's it exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly the adage. And it's something that both parties had followed all the way up until this president.
Right. And so here's Donald Trump at the World Economic Forum in Davos, which is sort of ironic. But anyway, here's a little bit of what he said to the press. He did a little press conference over there. And here's his some of his commentary on the impeachment trial that's happening back at home, talking about Jerry Nadler, one of the impeachment managers.
First of all, Gerald Nadler, I've known him a long time. He's a sleazebag. Everybody knows that. Pat Cipollone is a high-quality human being. I was very impressed with Pat. He had great emotion yesterday. Pat's a brilliant guy, but I've never seen that emotion. And that's real emotion. That's because he knows this is a hoax. Oy. And I was very proud of the job he did. I've known Jerry Nadler for a long time. He opposed many of my jobs. I got them all built, very successfully built in New York. But so we have yet another fight. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it surprising? Isn't it amazing? But if you look at, you know, other aspects or other parts of your question, I think that
All right, that's enough of him. He calls Gerald Nadler a sleazebag, and that and more. I mean, he went on from there. He knows no politics end at the water's edge. I don't think he's ever heard the term, and if he did, he wouldn't know what it means.
Well, you remember he did the same thing when he was in France for the commemoration at Normandy.
Right.
He kept world leaders waiting while he talked.
Yes, to the press.
Crash.
Right.
He
bad-mouthed people.
He has no boundaries. And if we're being honest, Nicole, and I think I'm eager. I don't know if you've ordered it yet, but I've downloaded a very stable genius.
Oh, I can't wait. I actually have a request to see if they'll send me a copy. But if not, I will bite the bullet.
It's going to take a while. It's on back order. So I'm going to listen to it on Audible. That's a plug, Audible. Send me more points. let me say that we know that what you just played is an example of the pathology that is Donald Trump's mind.
Yeah.
He projects on everything or all of his qualities onto everyone else. So when he calls Jerry Nadler a sleazebag, he's talking about himself. When he says that he built all of those buildings that Nadler posted, I was in New York. I've known Jerry Nadler for 40 years. Mm. I watched Donald Trump during that time in the 80s try and get those things developed. He did not build them all. Many of those that he did succeed in building, he did in ways that were there to be a full examination of the Trump Organization's records would raise some very serious questions about his practices in building in New York. And there's been much investigation into that. All of that is the history that brings us to today, where people who've known Donald Trump, New Yorkers, I believe he got 15% of the vote in the city of New York. He is not, to those who have lived with him, there is nothing left to be revealed here. We know that he is exactly what he called Jerry Nadler.
Oh, yeah.
A sleazebag.
That's the perfect description. And I'm from New York. I was born in New York, lived there my first 11 years. Then after college, moved back and did the city for another 5 or 6 years. So, I experienced New York in the Donald Trump era, and it's he's always been an attention whore, and now is nothing different. The weird thing is, though, that television made him into this cult figure, and I don't get it. You know, I'll play one more short clip from Trump at Davos just to give you an example of. So you heard what he said about Gerald Nadler. Listen to the way he lies with such ease, with such impunity, when talking about the entire impeachment process.
Wasting time in Washington And I watched. They don't talk about my conversation. They don't talk about my transcripts. Remember this. When Schiff made up the phony story and he repeated it to Congress and the world, and it was a totally phony story, then I released the transcript. There was supposed to be a second whistleblower. What happened to him? There was, wait, otherwise I won't do your show. Wait, there was supposed to be an informer. What happened to the informer? All of these people disappeared. And when they saw this transcript, they said, we got problems. But they went ahead because they were already there, because they had a phony, concocted story made up. So here's the story. Did nothing wrong. It was a perfect conversation. It was totally appropriate. The best lawyers in the world have looked at it. Hi. The Department of Justice has looked at it, given it a sign-off. There was nothing wrong. They never thought I was going to release the conversation. They probably didn't think we had transcribers or we had it transcribed or taped, but they never thought we were going to release it. When we released that conversation, all hell broke out with the Democrats because they say, wait a minute, this is much different than Shifty Schiff told us.
What is he talking about? We read
please
the transcript
it
and
please,
it implicates him.
It
I know, right? It's just mind-boggling.
Look, let's just unpack that for one brief second, because I've reached my capacity, and I believe most people, in fairness to their own mental health, uh-huh. can only listen to him for very, very
yes.
short periods of
yes.
time. One of the lessons I learned from Rachel Maddow, who remains a beloved friend, but more than that, a teacher, is she always shows him like a silent movie.
Mm.
She watches what he does, but doesn't listen to the words
no.
because they are dangerous.
Yes.
They are. Everybody knows. When he says everybody knows, it means nobody knows.
That's right.
So to unpack what he just said, he never released a transcript of the conversation.
That's right. It was
there
a
is
memorandum.
Not
nope.
a transcript in the public domain. It may exist, but it is locked away.
Right. And what
it
he's calling the transcript
summary.
On the top says, this is not an exact transcript of this call.
Right.
It's a memo.
Well, it's a summary.
Right. It's a summary.
And he said only one thing true in that entire rant. And that was that when he released that summary, all hell did break loose.
Yeah.
Not because he was exonerated, but because he was so completely disconnected from reality, as he always is,
mm-hmm.
that what he uses, it's a default. He's rather like, it reminded me listening to it, Nicole, of how you train a parrot to speak. You train a parrot to speak by saying things over and over again, like,
right.
Polly want a cracker,
right.
Polly want a cracker.
Sure.
And that's what the perfect call is for him.
Yeah.
It is parroting a word that he invented. He does this as he does with nicknames like Shifty Schiff.
Yeah.
And that's all he can say. It doesn't matter if it's connected to reality. It's not. It has no connection whatsoever to factual, observable truth. So when he says things like read the transcript, A, there isn't one, and B, he doesn't want people to read that summary because he's clearly guilty of trying to influence a foreign leader for his personal political gain.
That's right. No, that's right.
I want to say that I encourage people to do something. You made a very important point that people are not going to watch all 12 or 13 hours of this,
mm-hmm.
but it is available in the era in which we live. On YouTube, you
yep.
can go to highlights. And one of the things I really encourage people to do is to go to YouTube. I feel like the anchor and network, Howard Beale. Get up from your
right.
radio when we're done with this
yep.
conversation
yep.
and you're done listening to Nicole Sandler. Listen to the entire show, by the way.
Yes, please.
But as soon as she's done, please get up, go to your device where you can access YouTube and look for Adam Schiff during the course of this trial. Anytime Adam Schiff got up to rebut the Republicans, you will hear a masterclass
yeah.
in logic and in devotion to the rule of law and the Constitution. This man is one of our greatest patriots. We are lucky to see him in our lifetime. He has arrived at exactly the time the country needs him.
I couldn't agree more. Hey, David Bender, let's for the next, we don't know how long it's going to go on, possibly 2 to 3 weeks. This is going to be a daily occurrence. Now, the reason they're starting at 1 o'clock Eastern, especially today, is John Roberts has a day job. He's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
He does, yeah. And, funny about that.
Right. And today, actually, the court is hearing a really important case on separation of church and state. This could have major ramifications. So that's just a sidebar, something, you know, to keep an eye on.
Well, I pray they get it right.
Yeah, you and me both. But we're looking at 12-hour days. So they go from about 1 in the afternoon until whatever time at night, 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. Do we know if that's the schedule they're going to keep?
This week, because of the MLK holiday, it's Tuesday through Saturday.
Right, right.
Next week, in theory, it will be Monday through Saturday, in theory. Now, the senators have tried to, by the rule yesterday, try to extend it out a little bit longer. So that may shorten it a bit, shorten the days. We'll see. We'll see. This is all about the State of the Union. And the president and Mitch McConnell want to have this over before the State of the Union, which I believe is
February 4th.
We have
the Iowa caucuses on February 3rd. And the State of the Union on February 4th.
So from the perspective of at least four Democratic senators, they too hope this will get done soon.
They want this over.
We will be following this every day. And I look forward to having this conversation again at some point, because there's much to talk about.
Most definitely. I so appreciate your input. David Bender, find him at progressivevoices.com. You're doing a series called Stand and Deliver that airs at the top of the hour. What do you want to tell us about it?
Well, a slight correction of the record. It is Stand and Be Counted.
Oh, Stand and Be Counted. I'm sorry. Stand and Be Counted.
That's all right. It's all right. I took the title of Stand and Be Counted from a book and a documentary I did with David Crosby about 20 years ago, which was about the history of activism, why artists stand up and use their art, musicians, for causes like Live Aid or Farm Aid or We Are the World. So it seemed particularly appropriate at this point, where all of us need to stand up and be counted, to cover this impeachment and cover this process, first in the House and now in the Senate, from the perspective that really has to be made clear. This is not just on the Senate. This is on us. And that's what we're doing with Stand and Be Counted. We're talking about how each of us has to make our voice heard. This is the crucial time. No one can sit on the sidelines. I know, Nicole, you're not doing that.
No.
I didn't want to be back on the air, I have to tell you. I have a number of other projects, writing and broadcasting I've been doing, producing a documentary. But we cannot afford to stay out of this discussion, because nothing short, and this is not hyperbole, this is simply observable fact that our republic is on the line this year.
Most definitely. And we all need to be involved. We all need to be paying attention. We all need to step up. Next time we talk, David Bender, we'll go into the ramifications of what happens after. Look, we know, unfortunately, due to the makeup of today's Republican Party, especially the makeup of today's Republicans in Congress, Donald Trump will not be convicted and removed unless something massive happens, unless John Bolton is called and spills everything and it's just undeniable. And even then, it's questionable as to whether some of these diehard right-wing nut job, which is what the Republican Party has become today, will side with him, with their cult leader, or not. We don't know. But, general wisdom tells us he will not be convicted and he'll walk away. And what will the ramifications of that be? So we'll save that for next time.
Indeed. To be continued.
Definitely. David Bender, thank you so much. Always great to talk to you. And go get the popcorn ready for today.
You know what? Empty calories. I'm going to find something with a little more protein.
Popcorn, popcorn though is low calorie. As long as you air pop it, you don't use the oil. It's actually a good healthy snack. Just saying.
Right, but I you know what? At the end of it, I still feel like I've eaten air.
I hear you. All right, no problem. I'll have the popcorn. Thanks, David. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And with that, we come to the end of another program. Big thanks to David Bender, and thanks to you for bearing with us. They're still on recess. They'll get back to it shortly. We'll keep it going. Tomorrow, Howie Klein will be here. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm looking for some kind of pithy saying to end the show with, and I don't have one. Good luck to us all. I know that's stealing from Brad Friedman, right? Good luck, world. I got to come up with a sign-off. So if you think of one, email me, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. Until tomorrow, everyone, bye. Peace out. That works.